Calling the meeting at 4 o'clock p.m. And may we please have the pledge of allegiance.
All right, if we can all stand, base the flag, stand up a heart, ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, may we please have roll call?
Vice President Altamirano,
Here.
President Leja,
Here.
Director Scarvelis,
Here.
Director Treba,
Here.
Director Murphy,
Here.
Okay, and I would just like to ask the board for approval. We would like to move a couple items from reports to, I guess, the public comments is where we're going to put them. So item 7E, the student liaison report, followed by item 7C, the Cal Poly presentation. Do we need to have a
I think it'd be
vote?
appropriate to make a motion to modify the agenda.
Okay.
So there's
So,
I'm not understanding what you're saying. You could repeat that,
we're
please.
going to pull, I'm proposing we pull items 7E and 7C from reports to public comments or before the consent calendar.
I think moving it before the consent calendar, but not to the public comments I had before.
Okay.
So
that would be the first.
I just want to make sure that I understand what the motion on the floor is.
The motion is.
If I could just state my understanding.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to move agenda item 7C and 7E to between agenda items 4 and 5.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. So I make the motion. Leslie seconded the motion. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay. So with that change.
Actually, as long as we're discussing the agenda, I'd like to remove from the consent calendar items D and E, 5D and 5E. And also the salaries, expenses, and transfers. So that's B, D, and E.
Okay. We don't need a motion on that.
No.
Even though we're not in consent.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, I would like to invite the student liaison to give our report.
Well, good evening to Mr. Lattison, to the board of directors, to the Lulu Community Service District. I'm getting a little insight into what Hooper Unified School District has been doing as far as our goals toward progressing achievement and innovation, our employment community relations, and our fiscal solvency. Now, early in March, we had celebrated a We Hearts Arts event in which we had members from our theatrical, choir, band, and other performing arts programs to come to our district office and present where our funding was going. Thankfully, to very helpful outcomes, which we had small teaching moments where our district members got to see what things like improv or learning how to play choir notes, giving us an insight into what questions are being taught and how it can help them develop mentally and physically. Second, we have the Ina Arbuckle Elementary School's 70th anniversary. They had a special event with Superintendent Dr. Elliot Duncan and Dr. Tretton Hansen and some other teachers whom we used to teach at Arbuckle Elementary to reminisce on how the school has grown, both physically and its educational development. Thirdly, I have a very important update on Measure EE's work at specifically Patriot High School, in which we have finalized specifically this week and by tomorrow the theater's renovation, solving many of our issues with power and presentation, of which I was personally there for the installation of our newest audio and visual equipment. On our last piece on the list is this Tuesday, we had a presentation at Hoopa Valley High School where all of our students who were approved for the State Seal of Civic Engagement gave a small presentation on their projects and how they've been helping around our city with programs such as food drives, river cleaning, senior citizen events, and I believe a few students also provided work on preventing fires, which we sadly had an issue with. And lastly, we'd like to congratulate Ms. Juana Rodriguez on being approved to teach the first year RCC course at Patriot High School.
Thanks.
Do any directors have any questions or any events they'd like me to investigate for next?
So the RCC theater course being taught to high school, that's for college credit?
Yes.
Is that one of those ones where they get like that? If you take it as like an AP in the high school, you get like the 5.0 instead of the 4.0, or do you get the college credit?
These college courses work through the actual college itself.
Okay, so you get college credit.
You'll get college credit, and you'll have a separate GPA in college than you do at high school. That's
great. I just had a quick question on the League Art Arts. Was that at a particular school, or was that district?
We had it at our district office, but we had representatives from Miraloma Middle School, Aruba Middle School Band, Patriot High School, and I believe a few other high schools who came and presented dances, some performances, and movies, and improv stuff.
Great. Like always, good job. Thank you.
Yes, thanks so much. We appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Okay, and with that, we'll move then to item 7C, and will we have a staff report or?
So Jacqueline introduced them, but obviously there are some fresh faces in the crowd. I think in my 7 years, this is the fullest our report has ever been. So we're really excited to have them here. Jacqueline will give a brief introduction, and then the floor will be theirs.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. So as we kind of discussed during our last meeting that we had during the Budget and Finance Committee, actually, the district, Rubidoux Community Services District, is looking at using RO in the future to both improve our water quality, but also to meet our TDS requirements with as we expand our service area. Specifically, with our TDS management plan, we need to figure out something to approach TDS. So the district partnered with CalPLI Pomona, specifically the senior project in front of you. These are civil engineering majors at CalPLI Pomona, who are in their senior year, so final year, and this is basically like their capstone project. So they actually need a project to graduate, so we were able to partner with them to produce for them to do this. So this is all their work. And with that, I will have them go through their presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah, you get to go whenever you're ready.
Okay, so you all stand up.
Yeah, the history was standing for everybody. So why don't we just go like five out of them? So I'll start us off, and then we'll have the rest of the people step up.
Yeah.
So maybe Ryan, Esteban, and Tyler.
You expand the root capacity as well as the water capacity.
Yeah.
I think we're good to get started. So, welcome. It's a pleasure to be here and presenting for you guys. This is a big opportunity for us, and we're going to be presenting on Rubidoux Water Infrastructure Improvements and Education Center, and we're the RO pros.
Okay.
Oh, there we go. Oh, I'm sorry. There we go. Okay, so this is our team. I'm Tanner.
I'm Banks.
I'm Chris.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Anthony.
I'm Gabriel.
I'm Kyle.
And that's the one.
I'm Victor.
I'm Dennis.
I'm Noah.
And I'm Ryan.
And here's some of the industry advisors and faculty that have helped us with this project. And so I'll quickly pass it up, but Ryan's over here. Pass out to Ryan to talk about Envision before we get into everything.
Thanks, Tyler.
So we've partnered with the Institute for Sustainable Infrastructure and the TAB program to incorporate Envision throughout our project. Envision is basically just a sustainability rating system with five main categories: quality of life, leadership, resource allocation, natural world, and climate and resilience. It's going to help our project become more sustainable and resilient. And just to highlight a few, enhance public health and safety. We will be providing the community with safer and cleaner drinking water. And maximize resilience, adding two new groundwater wells to ensure that we have a more reliable source of water. And now I'll pass it back to Tanya. So before we get into the actual project, I'll talk about our client, which is Rigido Community Services District, or RCSD. So currently serving 39,000 residents with over 7,000 different service connections. And maybe the biggest point of this project is that the community is currently comprised of several disadvantaged and severely disadvantaged communities. And so as you can see on the red here, which indicates severely disadvantaged, it takes up a large portion of the community. And that basically means they're under 60% of the median statewide household income. And then in the beige, we have disadvantaged, which is under 80% of that number. And then additionally, they currently serve 166 GDP per gallons per day per capita as of their 2022 urban water management plan. So with all that in mind, and with the socioeconomic context I mentioned, the challenge that we faced is that as the district population continues to grow with an estimated doubling of population by the year 2050, the current existing facilities may be unable to meet population demand, especially with increasingly stringent California water regulations. And so our solution that we're proposing is to boost overall capacity to 9.4 million gallons per day for the community with the addition of a newly constructed or two newly constructed wells in a reverse osmosis treatment system. In addition to this, we're going to be blending that water from our treatment system with the nearby Anita V. Smith treatment facility. And then we're also going to be strengthening community engagement by proposing an education center on site for the community to learn more about the water treatment process and provide a educational learning environment. And so I'll quickly pass it off to Estevan to talk about the site layout.
Thank you, Tanner. So as you can see, circled in red, that is our approximate site location. It is in Cooper Valley, California, and is located in a primarily industrial slash warehouse complex. Right next to that is the Santa Ana Riverbend, as well as the California State Route 60 and the Interstate 215. Zooming in a little bit closer, highlighted in blue is our actual site. It's 310 by 420 feet. It is bordered by View Ricardo and Fleetwood Drive, and Fleetwood Drive is where the existing Anita B. Smith Ion Exchange facility is. And that is the facility we're going to be blending our RO water with. Wells 4 and 6 are also on site, and they will be referenced later in our slides. Here is a 3D rendering of what our site is going to potentially look like. So this is just a side profile of it, but here's a top-down view. So in the top, I guess, left-hand corner is our community center with the rain garden attached to that. And then right next to that is the parking for everyone who's going to work there, as well as the people who want to visit the community center. And then right next to that, we have our blending tank, as well as the pumping station. And then next to that is also our well. And then right below that, we have our RO facility building, as well as the chemical storage tanks outside of that. Now I'm going to pass on to Noah to talk about hydrology.
Thanks, Esteban. So our first step on the hydrology side of things was to go on the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration website in order to find the 100-year 24-hour rainstorm data. This ended up being about 0.2 inches per hour for the area. And after that, we went on to the United States Geographical Survey website. This gives us the soil data for the hydrological soil groups, which is 70% Class A and 30% Class C. Then we used the Riverside County Hydrology Manual, and we found for runoff, we had to use the rational method, and for travel time, we have to use the nomograph method. Moving on to hydrology results. So our slope went from 2.3% pre-development on the site to about 2% post-development. Our runoff coefficient increased from 0.32 to about 0.5 with developments. This means that our travel time changed from about 12.5 minutes to about 7.25 minutes, and our total runoff in cubic feet per second changed from about 0.2 to about 0.3. With how low this rainfall is, we have no real recommendations other than the rain garden that will catch most of the rainfall on site. Next up, we have Victor with the geotechnical side of things.
Thank you, Noah. For the geotechnical part, we'll be talking about geology. We have a geological map of our site located right here in the red. We determined with this map that we're on a alluvial fan, which is composed of different soil layers, such as sand, gravel, and clay. Here is a drone flight over site provided by Westland. We're located in that blue circle rectangle. Here, I just want to emphasize that the different soil layers that are shown in the clip right here, and just showing the different layers. Next, we'll be talking about the foundation recommendations. We'll be using the RO and Education Center's dimensions, but RO is having 105 by 80 and 4 feet on dimensions, and then the Education Center was a 5-on-grade by 50, 75, and 2 feet of concrete. Next, I'll be passing that aside to talk about the water quality.
Thank you. So our proposed reverse osmosis plant is assumed to have the same groundwater quality as the existing wells 4 and 6 at Anita B. Smith due to their close proximity. For our project, a key contaminant of concern is TDS, or total dissolved solids, and this is because TDS affects osmotic pressure, and this is a pressure that naturally drives water towards a more concentrated or salty solution. And reverse osmosis overcomes this osmotic pressure to produce permeate, which is the clean water, and brine, which is the reject water. And another reason for reverse osmosis is to help meet the district's goal of reducing TDS levels system-wide to below 450 milligrams per liter for the 2022 water master plan. Some other contaminants of concern include nitrate, perchlorate, as well as PFAS. And those average concentration values were calculated from the Public Drinking Water Watch website and represent untreated water. So comparison to any maximum contaminant level for standards in those right columns is to inform treatment design only. And now I will pass it off to Kyle to talk about our flow diagram.
Thank you. So now I want to talk about the overall picture. This will help us when we talk about our design. And so first, I want to say that our project is split up between two phases, one and two. Phase one consists of our proposed well A that will go through our RO facility. In parallel to this, we have the existing wells 4 and 6, and it will go through granulate activated carbon, ion exchange, and chemical treatment. And as you can see, the total dissolved solids is fairly high. We want, our goal is to lower this. And so we intend to blend both waters in a 0.4 million gallon tank. And to further facilitate this, phase two of the construction will build another well. This will boost our total inflow of 5 million gallons per day. This will cause the total TDS after blending to reduce by around half. Our RO facility has run an 87% recovery. So there will be some brine that will be sent to the Inland Empire brine line, while the remaining 9.4 MGD will go to the distribution system. And I started off with the wells, and that's what we start off with our design with Venice.
Thank you. So as Kyle said previously, we're gonna have both wells on our project site by the end of phase two. So the main thing we were concerned with while designing was to make sure that the hydraulic radius do not intersect to reduce the amount of environmental damage, and also to make sure that the wells are working at their maximum efficiency. So as you can see here, through our calculations, we found the hydraulic radius to vary between 125 feet to 150 feet, and at its max, we can see that they don't intersect. So zooming in a little bit closer, we're going into more depth about the well-to-discharge piping, which is based off of the Rubido Community Services District's Water and Sanitary Sewer Design and Construction Manual. Some notable things that we can see here in our plan view and our profile view is the combination air valve, the tap for testing, the swing check valve, the flow meter, the 12-inch concrete mortar line piping, the pump control valve, and the 4-inch concrete pad. So next we'll be moving more in depth into the treatment process, which Anthony will talk more about.
Thanks. So to talk a little bit more about the treatment, we first have to talk about what reverse osmosis is. And it's a membrane filtration method that uses pressure to push water through a series of semi-permeable membranes. And the image to the right is an example of a membrane from Hydronautics, which is a vendor that we're proposing of using. And as to why we're using reverse osmosis, as mentioned earlier, we're trying to lower TDS, or total dissolved solids, as well as nitrates, perchlorates, and PFAS, which is also known as forever chemicals. And then
point it this way. Point it.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
We're going to be doing this in two phases of construction, with each phase consisting of one new well, two skids, and 2.25 million gallons per day of clean permeate water. And highlighted is the total for both phases. And this fulfills our resource allocation component of Envision, which means that with the recovery of 85 to 87% recovery, we minimize the brine discharge. And then Tyler will talk more about the reverse osmosis design.
Thank you. So to summarize our reverse osmosis design, we have a feed flow of 5.2 MGD, a permeate flow of 4.5 MGD, and a brine flow of 0.7 MGD due to our recovery rate of 86%. And to meet our initial demand of over 5 MGD after both phases, we designed for 5 skids, 4 duty, 1 standby that you can see here. The other rooms are not finished, but some of the components will be electrical, a lab for on-site water testing, and an office space. And now I'll pass it off to Chris to talk about our process flow diagram.
Okay, so I just wanted to bring together everything our team has talked about so far. This is our simplified process flow diagram. A little animation is going to play right now to show kind of the main treatment process and how the water flows through the system. So which button is it?
Point it over this way.
Okay. So the blue is going to show the main flow. The green will show any chemical injection. And the purple will show the reject or brine. And the red not shown in this animation will be anything that goes to storm or sewer. So that's the influent water from our two proposed wells. And then we're going to lower the pH with sulfuric acid as part of our chemical pretreatment. Some of our designs include anti-scalant injection. Recently, we're not doing that because of a new design we're proposing that doesn't need to inject anti-scalant. Then the water is going to go through a 5-micron pre-filter. Okay, there we go. And then for the main RO process, the water is pressurized through a booster pump. Then it's going to go through stage one. And this is a two-stage process, which means that the brine from stage one becomes the influent of stage two. And then the brine from stage two goes out to the brine lab. And then the permeate from stage two combines with the permeate from stage one. And then this water will be remineralized because the RO process strips a lot of minerals. And then it's injected with chlorine for disinfection. After this, the water is blended with the finished chlorinated water from Anita B. Smith. And then it goes into the clear well for disinfection and adequate mixing. And then the water will go through our on-site booster pump station to finally send it to the distribution. Yeah. That's the overview of the entire process. Now I'm going to pass it on to Kyle to talk more about the clear well.
So the clear well serves two purposes. First is to blend the water from both facilities, and the second is to disinfect the water for bacteria and viruses. And so our design consists of a 0.4 million gallon bulk steel tank that consists of tight flex mixing systems. This allows for having multiple inlets, provides thorough mixing, prevents dead zones and poor mixing. And then we as well designed it based off to exceed federal recommendations for disinfection. We have CT, which stands for chlorine times concentration. We calculated that using our design parameters, and we compared that with the Environmental Protection Agency's range. And then rather than treating Anita B. Smith's water separately, we are able to reduce construction operational costs and thereby meeting envisioned standards of resource allocation. And then right after the clear well, it will be sent to the pump station.
There you go. So after the water is blended and disinfected, it's got to go back to the distribution system. And how do you do that? You do that with the pumping station. But before you can build the pumping station, you got to select the pump. And so to do that, we did a number of hydraulic calculations to include things like pressure, you know, velocity, elevation difference in the site. And we were able to spit out the total dynamic head graph. So this gives us a minimum value and a maximum value, but the maximum value allows us to get our design parameters. And so our design pressure is 90 psi, and our total dynamic head is 487 feet, which is the pressure energy that's in our system. And so based on those numbers, the pump we went with is the Pentair Aura 410 single-stage fluid case pump. We chose this pump for a couple of reasons. One, it has variable frequency drive technology, so it allows it to dynamically adjust to the demand of the clear well, and that does two things. It extends the life of the pump because it's not always running at its maximum operating point. It also reduces energy costs because it's the same thing. It's not running at that a single demand. And so, as you can see on the left, that is the pump curve. So that shows the best efficiency point, which is that little red dot right there. And in our configuration, we have a 2+1 configuration. So that is two active pumps splitting the combined load of our system and one on standby, just in case in the event that something like a power outage and a pump goes out, we have one on standby to pick up that load. And so that the little red dot is the best efficiency point, and it requires a, you can't see, but kind of hard to see, but it has a 15 feet of net positive suction head. And the calculations we did in our system, we have a total of 35.2 feet in total. So that's well above the requirement for each of our pumps. So now I'm going to pass on to Noah to talk about our short flow design.
Thanks, Esteban. So on the structural side of things, the reverse osmosis building, our goal was to create a safe and secure steel structure using ASCE 722 standards. We ended up creating a 105 by 80 by 16 foot structure to house the skids and everything else within the structure. We have multiple garage doors, each for each individual skid. We have steel girders and columns, and we also have a roofing system based off of the Butler Steel MR24 system. Next up, we have Binks with the community center.
So since the beginning of this presentation, we mentioned that we wanted to encourage community engagement with this project. And so we are proposing an education center. You might have also heard it called a community center. This is a place where there will be a multi-purpose room and the mentioned rain garden. The multi-purpose room will be a large building in the back with a divider wall that can be accordioned out or closed to split it into smaller rooms where classrooms will be. For tours and workshops where the community can come and learn about the RO process happening on site and where they can learn where their water comes from being treated by the Anita B. Smith or our proposed site. And this will benefit the community in the long term by educating them about where their water comes from and just about the general water process, which a lot of the public don't often know about. The rain garden itself will also have interactive displays and signage that will teach about native plants to the area and about water conservation, which is very needed in our drought-ridden state. The rain garden will also provide a space for pollinators, and the space for pollinators and the benefits to the community meet the envisioned standards for environment and quality of life. And there's also the potential for this building to be rented out to the community as a space for them to host events. The rain garden itself is a bioretention facility. This means it is a shallow vegetated basin with an engineered soil media that will soak up any of the water runoff that flows into it. Currently, it accepts about 33% of the flows from the entire site, but this can be increased through further low impact developments such as bioswales, rooftop cisterns, and dry wells. The garden will have a garden of plants, specifically those chosen to be native to the area and drought tolerant. There's not a lot of rain here, and there's a lot of sun, especially in the summer, so I wanted to ensure that the plants would be both colorful and resilient. My hope is to find a few of these plants, especially, bloom throughout the year, so whenever you visit, there should hopefully be something colorful in the garden. And these are just a few of the examples, along with a cross-section of the proposed rain garden. We have a lot of types of sage, and the landscape will live forever, I think, has a fun name. I'll pass it off now to Gage to talk about CECA.
Thank you. So before any construction can start, we have to go over CEQA, which is the California Environmental Quality Act. Our project is CEQA Plus. So CEQA Plus is basically our environmental studies plus these federal law and rules that we have to follow. So for example, like the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Farmland Protection. So for our environmental studies, out of 18 of those studies, we found 6 of those to be potentially significant impact, which are air quality, cultural resources, greenhouse gas emission, hazards and hazard material, noise, and tribal cultural resources. And we have these mitigation measures in place before these constructions, so there won't be any cause after the construction. So after this, we have done, there'll be a notice of intent, which is an NOI, a 45-day review period for the public and agencies to have any, if they have any comments, concerns, questions, it'll be there. And our team has completed a rough draft of an environmental impact report. All of these fall under revision for natural world and climate resilience as these ensure with the CEQA Plus requirements. Next, I'll pass off to Ryan to talk about the cost.
So for our cost breakdown, we broke it up into 2 different phases, as well as the 1-year O&M costs. So for phase 1, it includes things like the RO building and our first well is around $17 million. And for phase 2, it includes our second well, our remaining skids and pumps, and our education center. which is around 9.5 million. And our 1 year O&M cost, which includes operations, maintenance and repairs, is around $3 million. And with contingency of 50%, because we are in the preliminary design phase, we wanted to add enough buffer in our cost, so it's around $40 million. So to offset some of those costs, these are some of the main fundings we plan to apply for. So one of them is the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund, which is a federal loan, and the Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart federal grant. And lastly, for Envision, in phase one, we plan to reach Envision Silver, which is 35% of the total 1,000 credits. And once the project is completely finished in phase two, we plan to reach Envision Gold, which is 40% of the total 1,000 credits. And now I'll pass it back to Tanner to talk about our overall goals.
So just to quickly summarize everything that we've gone over, our proposal is designed with specific consideration for the disadvantaged communities of Rubidoux. We're going to be providing clean resource and energy efficient, cleaner potable water for this community. We're going to be expanding water production to meet a future doubling in demand by 2050. We're going to be emphasizing public engagement through the use of an education center that we're proposing. And finally, we're going to be cost efficient with the use of a two-phase installation system for a whole project. And these are just our acknowledgments, some of our sponsors and some of our faculty and staff that have helped us with this project, as well as vendors. And special thanks to ISI for giving us the Envision program. And thank you. That's everything.
Great job.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was their transition. I looked at the slides ahead of time, and the slides are one thing. I'm not an engineer by trade, but the slides are really great. But your guys' transitioning, your talking points, you guys fed off each other really well. That was great.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions regarding our project?
I do. Okay, so I know this is just a proposal, but then going back, how would we be able to fund this long-term, if it's sustainable, how would we be able to do something like this? Is it something that you guys already have looked at?
So that'll be part of like the next steps with the feasibility study. So what we'd like to do is kind of take what they've done, what these students have done, and this amazing job that they've done, and then give that to a consulting firm to go through further detailed costs and the O&M and long-term to see what kind of impact does this do to our community. We obviously know that we're going to have new development coming online, which will help to pay for this. And that's the plan, even in our fee nexus, the plan is for it to pay for that. But in the interim, we might not have those things online yet. And so then how do we go about funding? So that will be kind of the next steps of this.
And I saw the property. Is that property the only site that you guys thought was the best one, or could that be moved to another area?
Sorry, it'd take a little bit to probably get to the property side. But yeah, we did analyze multiple sites, including areas outside of that location. However, we just found that that property was the easiest to get through. We didn't have to go through any eminent domain or anything. We just have to
public property to purchase.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that something that can work out with the district property that we're negotiating with?
So it's a totally different property. So we haven't engaged them yet because we want to engage that property owner at this time. There are a few viable properties adjacent. Actually, there's even some recently there's been some vacancies or some new signs up of places that are for sale. If we can find a place that already has an existing structure that we can put the RO in, we would do that rather than constructing a new structure because it would just be less expensive. But that's something that would happen, I guess, with the next steps. So
that was it. Just to be sure we can move the land, or it was something that had to be done in that specific area. So it could be anywhere within
it. It could be in anywhere kind of adjacent to our Anita B. Smith treatment plant, because the idea is we'd want to minimize our piping since the piping will be fairly expensive.
And it has to be in the same proximity as the brine line.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of anything in the like Fleetwood, Via Ricardo, that little loop.
Is it too far from Rio Vista project?
It's too far. Yes, much too far from Rio Vista.
Are you guys familiar with the LEEDS program?
The LEEDS program?
Yeah, Leadership and Energy Efficient Development Systems. What they do is they, you know, if you go down to the Skechers building there off the 60 freeway, that is qualified as a LEEDS program. You go out there, there's a plaque there, and everything they did when they built that building was monitored about how far they traveled to develop this to develop the supplies or develop the building. Everything was about saving the environment. Okay, they even have a garden on top of the building. You qualify for all these things, and you qualify for a massive tax break. You know, so go down and take a look at that building. I took classes on this. That's why I know, and I actually listened.
Yeah.
But that was really interesting to me. I don't know if you guys can try to look it up one day just for the heck of it and see what that's all about, you know. But like I said, a good example is that Skechers building on the 60 freeway. It's a big old plaque out there that said this is a Leafs building.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they monitored every single thing, even the roofing supplies, how far they traveled to develop, to distribute them, or, you know. Everything was, you know, local contractors. That they didn't have to travel far to get to the job site.
Yeah,
something you might want to take a look at when you do go through this process.
Yeah. Also, the so what they're going through with the Envision, what you guys see there. So that is something that we did get selected for. That's that TAP program that you guys authorized, that the board of directors authorized sometime last year. But through the Institute for Sustainable Infrastructure, they found a way to kind of rank the sustainability of infrastructure. So LEED would be good for like the building, and maybe we could see if the building is LEED certified on site, but the infrastructure itself, that would kind of fall under the Envision portion of this. So we haven't looked, and that's one thing too. I don't know if there's any specific grant funding if you make these tiers, but that'd be something that we can definitely look into.
Even the partnership with the Inland Empire and Trade Tech, there is a building off of Avalon that the city just acquired
from the building. Well, let's chat after. Let's you tell me the buildings you know of.
And yeah, I think this would be a great partnership for them for the educational part too.
Yeah.
You guys did amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Are there any other questions or comments?
I have a comment. So I graduated from Cal Poly last century. That's a better dress than I ever was.
Did you listen?
When?
In attention.
Then or now?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very impressive presentation. Some of the stuff that's new terminology to me. I don't know anything about this Envision or this Leeds or any of that kind of stuff. But it's interesting to point out that the community is disadvantaged because they have a comparatively low median household income. Mm-hmm. And it's that community that pays for these improvements. I know that paying for a community center is something that they would think is a good use of their money. But I can understand why people that like marquee projects would think that that'd be an important thing to have. You see it all the time. And I have one final comment. If you guys are looking for work, Riverside County Flood Control is hiring.
Yeah. Wow.
No, he's
they hire student interns. They hire recent college graduates. I saw a few of you had your EIT. That's a super good deal. I remember that test. It was not easy. That's all my comments.
Thank you.
I just, I'm all on board with the reverse osmosis. I find that interesting. Something we need.
And well, I'd just like to compliment you all. You did an amazing job. You look great. You sounded very professional. I know you put, I don't know how much time did you guys put into this project?
We've been working on this since August.
Since August?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, a few hours.
Yeah. Well, it really shows you guys did a really good job. So we appreciate it. We thank you and hope to see some of this come into fruition.
Yeah, and thank you guys too. I know you guys have been primarily working with me and Julie, the assistant engineer who's back there. So yeah, thank you guys so much for all that you did. I've seen this project progress kind of along the way, and it's just incredible what you guys have been able to accomplish. I mean, even some of the presentations that we hear by professional firms aren't as put together as yours. So you guys should really give yourselves a pat on the back. You did a fantastic job. So thank you.
I noticed your printouts have page.
If you guys want this, you guys have to say.
Thank you. Good luck with that.
I'm gonna go ahead and leave because I had all of that one. Wow. And with more of you, thank you. Have to talk to Brandon.
Here's Boyd.
They just typed in.
It's okay. We know the logo. Ready? Me first. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Everybody smile. Cheese. 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 Okay, that was great. Now his turn.
One more. Come on, Hank. Smile.
Okay, thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Jacqueline, you really should have been a picture.
Oh, it's okay. No, that's okay. They're the ones that did the hard work. Okay, they did all the hard work.
Thanks again, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I was emailing you a couple of weeks ago about it.
Sorry, this is actually thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, of course, man. Yeah, no, thank you guys. Yeah, great job.
Thank you.
I was looking around like you're
exactly.
Does anybody need a break? Ready to So on to the consent calendar. Earlier we had a request to pull items B, D, and E from the consent calendar. Can we have a motion to approve the balance?
I'll make the motion.
Yes. We go.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Item passes 5-0. Okay, and now we move on to item C, reports. And we'll start with the operations report.
Okay, so we have a number of different operations report. We're going to start with 7. Big A, little A, water and wastewater operations. Miguel Valdez will give that report.
Thank you, Brian. I'll do those D. So the operations report for the month of March, we'll start with the chemical deliveries. Had one load of sodium bisulfite delivered to the Thompson plant. Salt, we haven't had any salt delivered to the Smith plant. We'll have a different update next month on that. Liquid chlorine, sodium hypochlorite. We had a couple loads delivered to the Thompson plant, Smith plant. New certification. So far this year, we've had 3. Those Hunter Fike and Jeff Dean, that's our collections team. So Hunter Fike got his sewer systems collection maintenance 2, as did Jeff Dean. They got those 1 day apart. And then Hunter Fike, a month later, got his water distribution 3. So that's those guys are really chugging along on the certs. Then we have an update on the sewer spill that occurred February 13th.
Okay.
So after the videoing of the sewer line, you know, we discovered an offset on the 8-inch sewers, right? That was kind of the cause of the sewer spill blockage. You know, so a month later, our staff, you know, they got prepared and cut out that offset. Right. So the prep for the work, you know, we dug the trench area, rented a sewer bypass pump, blocked off all the nearby storm drain inlets in case of a spill with a Bisqueen, kind of a polyethylene put on the storm drains and sandbags. And then the repair. So with the repair, we plugged the upstream manhole, stopped the flow, tested and placed a bypass pump to the in the service area to repair the area. Then we cut a 12 feet, 8-inch VCP pipe and replaced it with a SDR PVC pipe. Then JCSD was also on scene. They kind of gave us a hand, and they also kind of wanted to see because they had never used a bypass pump, well, not recently, so they kind of wanted to check it out as well. They brought over their CCTV video van too. They videoed the line after the repair just to make sure everything went well, and it did. You know, we also had our vectors on site just in case, you know, something happened with the pump, but everything went as planned. It really turned out great. Got some pictures. So there on the left, that's our crew. They're priming that sewer pump, priming the bypass pump. That's Candlelight.
What's
Candlelight
that
area. It's over by the golf course.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that line drains into the lift station at the golf course.
We place it with the same size pipe.
Yes. It's a different diameter, yeah, but the inside it's 8-inch. So the VCP pipe is thicker. So yeah. That picture on the right, you can see the offset. That's kind of where the pipe shifted downwards. So that's our Hunter Fike. He's cutting that piece of pipe out. That's the new pipe. Then afterwards, that's the inside of the pipe. So making sure we repaired that offset. Any questions on that? That worked out really well. That was our first, you know, kind of big repair we've done with our collections team. Then the potable water production report, we had 404 acre feet of water produced in the month of March. March was a hot month. We had a handful of days that were over 100 degrees. That's why it's kind of higher than usual.
An acre foot is how many? 353,000.
325,000.
I didn't ask to be that specific.
Sorry.
You look close though. Yeah. See, that's one. I got it up here, man. I've been doing this for 12 years now. I still remember.
And in million gallons, we had an average of 4.25 million gallons produced a day. 1.79 that went on to the Riverside Wastewater Treatment Plant. And the reservoir capacity report, we had our reservoir levels about 70% for the month of March. Any questions?
On March 6th, the reservoir dipped to 67.
March 6th?
March 7th.
7th.
Dipped to 67%.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Watson.
Was there a supply problem?
I think well, 6 had turned off in the middle of the night. Yeah. So.
Okay.
All right, what's your next?
We'll move on to item B, Anita B. Smith Water.
Yeah, this is an evening full of presentations, so Bran is going to give that next presentation. Slides on your packet and on the screen.
Okay. So, as you know, the Anita B. Smith facility is undergoing a lot of upgrades right now. We'll talk so much about it, but this is a very high priority for us. One might say an emergency at this point. So the Anita B. Smith plant is a nitrate removal facility. First and foremost, that's what it was built for. Some years ago, we added PFAS treatment there as well through GAC. Now, with that, the nitrate removal system, part of it is being that connection to the brine line that we spoke a lot about with the kids' presentation here about the RO facility, with a lot of fallout of what we're putting in that brine line is just essentially that brine. And brine and calcium go hand in hand. They fall out together. So those that line, that brine line, gets coated with calcium all the time. It's constantly being coated. And if you don't do something about it on a regular basis to maintain it, you run into problems. So this presentation, for all intents and purposes, is we have a 4-inch brine line that runs up and down Fleetwood from our treatment plant to Wilson Street, ties into the brine line here, and then throughout our treatment plant here, right underneath all those vessels. That design, if you ask me, but that's where they decided to put it. So altogether, it's 945 linear feet of 4-inch pipe. That is not looking so good. It's a critical component of the plant operation, and failure means failure of the plant. And currently, the Smith plant's 45% of our possible production, potable water production. So look at these pictures. That's what it looks like. And in the past, none of us were here, but it has clogged before. And what did they do? They dug it up and replaced it. And then this is what we're left with. So we've tried jetting it with a vector. We cannot get the nozzle in to get that in there, nor would it break it up because it's very, very tough. So this is our guys going in the manhole, breaking out about 4 inches of this calcium buildup to try to get what they can do to put in there to see if they can break anything up, and to no avail. So yeah, the progression, the condition just keeps getting worse over time if you don't do anything about it. And again, if you don't do anything, it means failure of the plant. So operational risk. So like I said, we did try to hydrojet it. We tried mechanical cutting. Both methods were unsuccessful. So the operational risk, reduced discharge capacity from the treatment process, likelihood of complete pipeline blockage, potential for brine backup in the treatment facility, and risk of plant downtime or reduced production. Escalation risk, continued buildup will accelerate restriction, and failure will require an emergency excavation, and the Fleetwood location increases cost and disruption. So it's a pretty big deal. So alternative. So we can dig up the street and replace the pipeline out in the street. And the plant, we'd have to dig up the asphalt, run a new, because we can't get underneath the vessels. There's already 2 feet of concrete there. It's just a bad, 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 bad. So alternatively, what we end up doing, what other people have done, we did some of this at JCSD, is acid wash that line. So you would essentially put a tank in the middle, put pipes going to both ends, completely seal it off, have a pump that pumps water and some type of acid into the pipe and just eats away the scaling little bit by little bit. And you just manage the strength of the acid and keep it out of like a 4-to-1 if you're using muriatic, and keep it pumping. And then eventually you get to a point where it softens it up enough and it's gone down enough to where you couldn't get a sewer, the sewer cleaner in there and just break it off into big chunks. So what we're proposing is the cleaning is obviously the safest and cleanest method, or I wouldn't say safest, but cleanest method for us as far as cost goes. And the proposed solution for us is we're going to go out to bid for this. We're going to send out an RFP, solicit qualified industrial contractors, and evaluate the proposals and return to you guys with our findings. The goal is to restore that pipeline to full functionality and protect the treatment plant operations and avoid an emergency failure scenario. So that's that one.
I don't understand why hydrojetting wouldn't work. I mean, some of these Graco rigs have 10,000 PSI.
Yeah, so ours does. Ours does too. It can't fit in there. So any of the heads that we tried to get fit in there, the smallest head we got was about 1¼ inches.
Mm-hmm.
That's too small.
Is that because of the hard water? Is that
what it is? It's because of the process all the everything the process is taking
it's going
out
through,
is,
but the hard water doesn't help either.
Does not help.
So isn't there, is that a proven method with the acid? Is that a
Yeah, it actually is. So there's a company called Clean Harbors. You may have seen their vehicles rolling around. They do stuff just like this. And a lot of the industrial sewer cleaners will also take on projects like this. It's not unheard of. It happens. It happened to us at JCSD when I was there. We found a way to do some of the smaller portions of the acid washing ourselves, but nothing like this, nothing on this scale. So
how many linear feet is that brine line? What is that, like through two blocks or three blocks?
Yeah, it's 945 linear feet.
Yeah.
So from the manhole that's directly outside the cement plant to the Wilson Street.
Isn't there a line that stuff won't stick to? Isn't there something?
You know, there's a couple of things that you can do. And you know what we found out at JCSD is that if you run a sewer backer through there quarterly,
yeah,
it doesn't get hard enough to stay forever. You break it off, you collect it, that's it. There's no issues. If you leave it for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, this is what you end up with.
Yeah.
So... also, there's another alternative method where you can add acid. Like we can add an acid drip or an acid injection point to the influent of the water going into the brine line tanks, because it goes into a tank, then it gets pumped into the line, and then it goes out and down to the brine line. And it'll sequester that calcium there. And that's an option for later, but we do already own a sewer vector. Adding another chemical to our treatment plant process doesn't sound fun,
yeah,
and or safe, honestly. So I think just a quarterly cleaning and we're not,
yeah,
that's it. It's really not that far. I guys run 1,000 feet all the time. So
at some point, that line that runs under the Nita B. Smith plant, that's going to have to be dealt with. Is there room to move that, to put a new line in that?
No,
it's all just con, really.
Yeah. So that's why we had acid washing on that one's our only hope.
Yeah. There's
no, Miguel was here last time. We had to redo. They dug that. They did replace that line, but then after that, to put it underneath, right where all the PFAS treatment is.
Yeah. There's a lot of site constraints at that plant. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you guys will all take.
Oh yeah,
I know. Everything is compacted in there. It's tough.
So, any other questions?
Where was that proposed site from the Cal Poly guys?
Sure.
It's right here.
It's right
across the street,
right across the street.
There's actually a Thompson. It's not was in Thompson Building Supplies, but there's a Thompson something right there.
Thompson Building Supplies.
It's right there on the corner, and then on both sides of that, on Via Ricardo. Right here, and then on Fleetwood, right here, both of those properties are of similar size and they're both open.
Yeah.
And they're bigger than the B2B.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, much bigger. Yeah. The one, well, I want to say it on public record.
All right. We'll leave it at that.
There's a nice building right next door that would be perfect for this area.
So if we do the acid cleaning wash, whatever. How long would that process take? Do we have an estimate?
I'd probably be done in a couple of days.
Okay.
Maybe at most.
Stuff eats it up pretty quick.
Yeah, and we would have to monitor it until then, because if it took a week, we'd have to shut the plant down for a week, and us heading into the summertime right now, that's not the best option for us.
Cool. So the process is stop using the plant, rehab the line, and then start using the plant again?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Okay.
Are you going to the
next one? Okay.
Yep, yeah, next one.
Okay. Just kind of a...
We should go let Boyd go first.
And next video.
just a small update for you guys. We've been working pretty hard to make sure that this all went through. You'll see these are the cameras at the Smith plant.
Nice.
So, it's taken a while now, but we're at the point where we've designed a wall. We're ready to, we're accepting bids. Believe it or not, not that many people are interested in doing this block work. We have, it won't end up being completely block wall. A lot of it will be 10-foot tall spiked fence with heavy wrought iron with steel on the back of it, really heavy duty stuff so you can't get in, only because there's certain places where, like, let's say right here, right? You're on this property line. There's already a small retaining wall there. The property line's thin. You don't want to really rip all that stuff up. And you'd have somebody have to break into that property to break into our property. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to put a huge block wall right there.
Those cameras look great.
Yeah, so
they pan and this
one here, yeah, there's one. That's the one. So Melissa, if you click on that one, if you double click on it. So this is the PTZ, so you can control it down there, Melissa. So if you turn it around, if you go down to the bottom left-hand corner, there's a controller. So if you hit the, so yeah, hit it to the right.
That one, yeah. Keep there going.
There
you
go.
Yep,
keep going. Keep right there. Keep going, one more of those.
To the right.
Terrence.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, somebody.
Look all the way to the street.
Look down the street.
Keep going. The wrong one. Yeah, that, you got it.
Okay.
Too
much. Oh, back a little bit.
Yeah.
So this is okay. We didn't spend that much time.
There. Oh, too much.
Hey, just one flip.
Just a little bit back. Just a little bit back. This is a really cool picture. Hold them right on. A little bit back. A little bit back.
Keep going.
Just want to see this.
There. Right,
right
there, there. Right there.
Okay. Now go right here to the at the plus sign and zoom in. Oh,
shouldn't touch it.
So if it doesn't see anybody moving, it'll go back and it'll roam around and it'll look for people. It'll see familiar faces. It'll read license plate numbers.
Really?
It'll hold everything in here for 2 months at this point. We can add more storage if we want, but this was a great first step. This week, the security beams got replaced with an upgraded newer company. And the pin pad has been replaced as well. And now there just used to be perimeter beams. And remember the people, they just cut the beams? Well, now there's lots of beams. So if they cut that beam, they're not going to make it through all the other ones. But I shut it off. So now when you go to the site, there'll be the security alarm will be on. And if you walk into the site without turning off the alarm, the cameras are going to send us a bunch of notifications. But if you disarm the site when you walk in, it'll disarm the alarms from coming. It'll still record everything. It's just not going to send us a bunch of alarms.
Yeah.
Does it go to the law enforcement or just us?
So if we're setting it up so that if it trips two beams, it's going to go straight to the cops. You'll have an option when they call you to, do you want us to send an officer? And in my opinion, if something trips two beams, you probably should. Yeah. So that's that one. So this is moving along very fast now. Well 4 got pulled yesterday by Lane Christensen Company. They're being awesome to work with. Let's follow this guy around. But, that's our security guard.
Showing him on
the dating site. Yeah.
He's taking notes. He's taking notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Too soon. Too soon.
So we're down. So there's a lot going on over there.
No.
All the electrical is almost done. The valving's almost
done. I know.
We're going to get into another one of the projects that's happening over there shortly. And then.
Man, that's great. That is a nice setup.
Very cool.
Brandon, Mr. Leisure had questions.
Yes, sir.
Your beams, what about animals?
The beams are this, they're about waist high. So if you get an animal that's that tall, it's probably a human. And it'll let you know. Okay, what's the next one?
I was going to ask, though, if we have a policy, do we have a policy that if it does break two beams and you ask for the sheriffs to respond, does anybody from the district go out as well?
Yeah.
Oh, we were, so be clear, since the day I started working here, we respond to every single alarm. And that was the case beforehand, but I will not settle for anything less than that. There's no excuse, in my opinion. So, okay.
I walked in during the presentation. Who monitors this?
That's an AI-driven system that the cameras are. The alarm beams that are in a site are monitored by an off-site third party.
Okay.
So when those go off, you receive a phone call. I haven't heard it yet. I don't think it's a live person. I think it's automated. But we'll be rolling this out to all of our sites, major ones first. Okay, so this was, so the fence being broken into opened our eyes up to a lot of things and also gave us some time to think. And the team came up with this idea that we started thinking about why are we doing things that we do over at that treatment plant. We pump the water out of the ground and it goes through these three treatment processes. So it goes through GAC for PFAS, it goes through ion exchange for nitrate, and then it goes into an air stripping tower, which you break your pressure, and then it's sucked back out of the air stripping tower through three different boosters, and then it gets pushed into the system. Right. So this project is a modernization of the pumping system at the Union B. Smith facility. It's to eliminate redundant booster pumping infrastructure, install high efficiency pumps, motors, and variable frequency drives, convert the system from a two-stage pumping to a single-stage pumping, maintain full treatment and regulatory compliance. So what that means, this is the air stripping tower over there. It's 60 feet tall. It's huge. And these are the GAC. So when that plant was built, there was detectable levels of volatile organic compounds in the water. Since that plant was built, we have not seen volatile organic compounds in the water. So it was built, the water goes through the whole treatment process, goes into this tank, and then we pump it out of the tank, goes into the system. We're pumping that water twice, which is very costly, and we've been doing it forever, and there's no need to. So the team went to the state and asked, do you mind, like, we think we can do this better. And they said, show us. We showed them, and they bought off on it and said, go for it. So we're going to rehab. We're rehabbing wells 4 and 6 anyways. Well, 4 is being rehabbed as we speak. And during that process, more than likely, we're going to have to replace the pumps or motors and that. So we worked with a company called SoCalREN, knowing that we're going to be improving the efficiency and our overall energy consumption at the site. And we showed them all of our documentation, and they're going to give us somewhere between $20,000 and $40,000 to put towards the VFDs on this project. Now, the money that we've already increased these wells, the well maintenance contract for back a couple months ago, takes care. It should take care of all of this. We shouldn't have to come out of pocket any more than we thought. But anyway, since we haven't had a detection in 2 decades of VOCs, the state's letting us get rid of it. So those are the boosters.
So it's a detection before it goes through all that process?
Yeah, the raw water coming right out of the well, non-detect.
And we can just bypass it? We can have it there maybe and just bypass?
No, you can't do it.
Yeah, but
no, it would be, they're really, so the what? Why that's a beautiful thing is because, and our team now is so on top of it, that these GAC vessels also capture VOCs. So at the time those were installed, we could have done this project. So now, since we're already going back, we're going to maintain wells 4 and 6 right now at the same time. Now's the perfect time to do this. So those are the boosters. We just painted them. So for the time being, we're going to shut the valves and we're going to take off the boosters and run straight pipes through until sometime in the future when we can budget more money to make it like it should be.
And that thing cannot be transformed and used in another one of our sites to do something else, or
the boosters,
that tall thing.
No, but what we have here, and you'll see in the next slides, are 2 200 horsepower motors and 1 100 horsepower motor. Now, when both wells are running, we run 1 200 horsepower and 1 100 horsepower motor. And with 1 200 horsepower as a backup, that's always there. You have to maintain it. In fact, it hasn't worked in quite some time. So just a little bit about the process. Right now, Well 4 is a 100 horsepower motor. Well 6 is a 200 horsepower motor. Well 4 makes 1100 GPM. Well 6 makes 2200 GPM. This is the process. It runs through GAC, nitrate removal, air stripper, then it goes through the boosters. What we propose to the state looks like this. The whole process is there, just no boosters. And what ends up happening is we go with 150 horsepower motor on well 4 and a 250 horsepower on well 6. Different set of bowls to overcome the different set of pressure, because now we're going to pump straight into the system. But what it allows us to do, when we go through it all, it's going to save us 150 horsepower with the pumping every time that thing turns on. So what well 4 was doing before is now free, and we're not using the boosters, which is a wonderful, wonderful trade-off. So that, what does it do? Eliminates the booster pumping infrastructure, reduces energy consumption, electrical demands, simplifies the plant hydraulics, improves the pressure controlling using BFD technology, and modernizes the water infrastructure. So it's the best thing we can do. It's a wonderful project. We're glad the state bought off on it, and we're super proud of it. Any questions?
What about solar? Is that something we've ever considered?
I think so, but it's more along, like, for the amount of power consumption that we're talking about.
Wouldn't count it, huh?
No, but like it could run some of our stuff. Like it could probably run some of our analyzers or something like that. But when you come to real power, like those motors, hundreds of horsepower,
it just wouldn't get it up.
Yeah. You ready for the fun stuff?
Sure. Let her run.
Okay. So yesterday morning at 5 a.m., an operator responded to a low level in a reservoir. Well 18 at our Thompson iron manganese removal plant had a failure. He showed up and the well looked like this. This is called a bonnet. Bonnet was on the ground. So that's not supposed to be there. And it's bolted down on top of it for all that. So without doing all the investigation we could do on our own, we knew we need to get a professional out there. And we called out Lane Christensen again. We're already working with them. We have a wonderful relationship with that company, and we're so happy about it. You can see the heat that was generated on the top of this motor if you're looking at that bolt. That's up here. And so it happened. So see the red on that shaft? That red is from hitting this inside of it. That thing's red inside of it and shot it up. So last night, or the night before last, at some point in time, this well ended up breaking in half inside the well. So today, Lane Christensen went out. They removed 40 feet of the well, the top 40 feet of the well, and the pipe broke off and fell to the bottom.
Yeah.
So tomorrow, after well 4 is done getting videoed, inspected, well 18 is going to get video inspected, and they'll come up with a plan. They run into this kind of stuff all the time to replace this. We don't have very good records on what is in this well at this point in time, but we know that the records that we do have do not match what this says. So we've been working. That's what Jacqueline and I have been doing this afternoon and through the meeting.
Yep.
And I was making this not so bad PowerPoint while we're having the meeting, but this isn't the right pump for this plant anyways. We were going to get to this project after July. This is going to be in next year's budget. Right now, they're out there. Everything they're doing is under an emergency scenario because this is bad news for us in the plant. Without this, it's really tough for us to make demand, especially with the state that the Smith plant is in. The major Smith plant work will be done in the next few weeks. But for right now, we're tight on water as it seems. That's the end of that slideshow. But with that leads me into my last point. Okay, so let's put us into a hard spot with water. We can still make our demand. We still have the ability to run well six, but that would be that's our backup. So what we did is we initiated our contract with JCSD, and currently we're taking 700 GPM from them until we get this taken care of. That started yesterday at 2 p.m.
Is that going to cost any water rate increase using the water from them?
No, I mean, it costs more money than it would cost us to make it. But in, you know, we're buying 1 million gallons a day from them for roughly $3,000.
Are we going to be able to see it, like, on our bill because of that?
No. Just in our budget, yeah.
Well, it would have been really cool if we had video of that.
Oh, yeah, I know. Believe me, I'm more mad about that than anybody.
But that thing could have popped off and hit the residents.
Right. It could have cost.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So that motor, that thing's a mess. And yeah, obviously.
So they'll fish the brokens.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, and then they'll.
Yeah, I'll probably be there for that. I want to see how that goes, but.
This is the one off 34th Street.
Yeah.
So the pump at the bottom, the pickup on the bottom, they're going to pull all that up then.
Yeah.
And then, we have all that casing in stock. We have all that.
No, we don't own any of that, but it's pretty readily available for those pump companies, and if it makes you feel any better, this was going to be the next well that we're going to do in July. So we're just fast forwarding it a little bit.
Yeah, that thing must have been making a racket before it blew.
It didn't. Jeff and I were going to do a testing the deck that day. Right.
No sign at lucky. All. Just blew its guts out.
Yeah.
You're lucky it didn't find out.
I know.
If you guys were there.
Yeah.
Well, that would have made it feel better, at least.
Yeah.
So.
I got a video of my roof blowing up on the house in the desert.
Oh, wow.
Literally the whole thing.
Wow. What are you imagining out there?
So is that the end of your report?
That's it. No more from me.
Any questions? Thank you.
Interesting report.
So if you could let us know the cause of the failure when it becomes available.
Absolutely.
Well, 18. And then we could post the slides that you presented online. That would be helpful too. I don't have a hard copy of the slide you presented.
Yeah, I didn't have them until the meeting.
All right, so if you could post them online, that would be a search.
We never determined who the culprit was.
Morgan Smith?
Yeah.
No means.
Somebody that knew that there was like a lot of copper there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Knew how to drill work
equipment. And realized and knew how to operate that equipment. I knew it was there. And probably knew that the alarm wasn't commonly turned on.
Okay, with that, can we move on to item C, district billing and collections process overview?
That would be me.
That was
me. I don't have interesting pictures like Brandon's, but we'll move along. I'll be presenting the overview of the district. The district billing and collection process. I think it's something that you guys will find very interesting to see how we get from sending a regular bill to the process to where the customers get disconnected. The purpose is to provide an overview of our CSD billing collections process and highlight customers' communication effort, also demonstrate proactive steps taken to avoid service interruption. Because at the end of the day, our goal here is not like how many people could we get turned off. Our goal has always been to try to prevent as many logoffs as possible and try to find some sort of means to assist the customers. We have two billing cycles. Cycle 41 is billed on the 10th of each month. And then we have cycle 40, which is billed on the 20th of each month. We roughly, it takes a couple of days for Rosanna to read those properties before we get to that point. And that's why you have those two separate bills. Our monthly bills include a due date along with final date to pay before the late fee is applied. And then on the back of the bill, it also provides payment options, assisted options, if unable to pay for our customers. Contact number, what to do in case of an emergency. Some of the stuff that our customer team provides to our customers is payment extensions, payment arrangements. We also have our customer service team guiding them to do other options besides a one-time payment. Sometimes some of our customers pay once a week just to catch up on their monthly bill. And of course, we have a commitment to work with our customers from day one. Some assistance that or resources for water bill support and programs that have been available for our customers is LIHWA, which is our low-income household water assistance program that was provided a couple years back. It helped quite an amount of our customers. Still now, every now and then, funds are available. We still communicate that to our customers, and every now and then, they'll still get some of those customers to help out. For customers that are seniors, we found this program. It's called the Riverside County of Aging, and that's located right off of Central by the 91 freeway, and that's only for seniors. And that was a program that we were trying to find for all of our customers, their seniors. And then we do have two local community faith-based support, which is Our Lady of Guadalupe Church on Belltown, and then St. John's Church, which is on Opal Street. Those two are great helping our customers. You don't have to be even a member of their church. They'll be able to assist them. We've referred a couple of our customers out there throughout the years, and they always help generously to the customers.
Can we include reach out in that?
I'm sorry?
Can we include reach out in that notice? Reach out also knows other agencies. And I know the city had also utility assistance funding. So that would be good to also include. Reach out would be able, there's one agency that has a connection with most of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm all about like trying, if you guys know any other programs that can help our customers, by all means, like email me, let me know. And then we could put in a bill insert or put it in our billing portal. To be able to help those out. This is just the billing volume overview of what we've billed in the last couple of months. And you'll probably see a little pattern. We usually bill about 3,400, 3,500 customers each billing cycle. Cycle 41 is our commercial customers and our residential customers. And cycle 40 is more of our residential customers, but they all align within the same number, about 3,400, 3,500 customers. We send out a final notice. These are issued after missed payments, deadlines, and they serve as a formal warning before further action is taken. What I didn't note on there is that by the time the customer gets this notification, they've already been 45 days past due. So this is just kind of like a flag for the customers, like, hey, you're past due. So maybe you forgot about your bill, or, you know, things come up and we know that. And then this is just like a courtesy reminder. Our volume pretty much stays consistent, about 400 customers, between 390 customers to 440 customers. During Christmas time, the holiday time, it does go up a little bit. So you'll see that number rise around that time. And then this is our beautiful red postcard notification that we send out to our customers. As you can see, the volume drops a little bit and it stays under 300 most of the time for both cycles, cycle 41 and 40. This postcard goes out 53 days after the original billing went out. And I love this because this one's sent out via our post office, and it doesn't show any personal information when it comes to like the name of the person, but it shows the address of service along with the past due amount and then the final day that they have until they could pay to avoid that interruption. If they scan the QR code, it'll lead them to our billing portal, and then it also shows them other ways that they could get assistance to make payment arrangements or if they need an extension to avoid that interruption. At this point, all of our customers are aware when they call that it's okay if you get to this point, we'll still be able to work with them, make arrangements, because again, at the end of the day, it's we're trying to avoid them to get interrupted. And then our lock-off process is 70 days after, between 68 to 70 days after your original notice went out. This is the final step that's taken before the account is interrupted. Our counter staff, even though it's not required, we make additional efforts before that that log off day, and we do contact our customers with low past due notice or balances. Or we also look at the list when we print it out and say, like, hey, what is it that is not normal here? What is there a customer that normally is not on here that is on auto pay and maybe forgot to update the card? Just stuff out of the ordinary that doesn't make sense for us. We reach out to auto pay customers, and then we also follow up on broken payment arrangements or accounts with customers that are with extensions. Our lockoff totals are really good numbers, in my opinion, and this is something that we take pride in. So for each cycle, we send out over 3,500 customers, and then on lockoff day, it usually stays below 50 customers. Obviously, the numbers, like I said, during the holidays are a little bit higher, November, December, but as the months pass by, you see the number drop to 35, 32, and that's pretty much what it stays throughout the year. Until the holidays hit. Those are really good numbers. And then this is just a little bit information, payment arrangements that the district currently has as of the 7th of April. We have 8 residential customers and then 1 commercial account. It's rare when you really see a commercial account in a payment arrangement or an extension. This scenario, the customer had a major leak. And he had been struggling to repair for the last 3 months. Finally, he got a hold on it, repaired it, and then we gave him the option of paying his regular bill plus an arrangement on the actual balance of that leak that he had. And then some key takeaways that we get from this is that our district follows a structure, multi-state billing process, and we have multiple notifications that are provided before disconnection process. Our staff does go beyond requirements to assist our customers, and we show strong commitment to minimizing service interruption. And then in closing, our team remains committed to customer service excellence, high transparency, and then working with our customers to maintain that service. Any questions?
Did we get a discount for auto pay?
We do.
I do have a question. My neighbor had an issue, which I kind of see both ways, that there wasn't a break. I understand that he's responsible from the meter to the house.
Correct.
The break was right at the meter where the connection goes into the meter. And it was obvious to me that it was probably something that may have happened just accidentally from who knows where. Who's responsible for that?
Well, from anything from the meter to the customer side, it's responsibility for the customer. And we do, before we get to that point, obviously the customer calls our district, right, to check the leak. And then we do have the field agent that goes out and does the repair or does the evaluation. But before we even make that decision, he will confirm with the field supervisor to make sure that it is customer side.
Have you heard of such a thing where the adapter was right at the meter? And who knows what happened? I have no idea, but, you know, how do you determine?
If it's the union right at the end of the meter, could the union connect it to the end of the meter, that's ours. And then the next fitting.
But is that the meter from the meter to the house, not from the street to the meter?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right there.
Right.
Yeah.
I had that happen to me.
Who was responsible? So there's the body of the meter, and then there's a piece that's called a tailpiece made out of brass. Then there's the union that's galvanized steel. And then there's pipe on the far side. It was dissimilar metal corrosion that caused the leak. And so I arrived home, and my water was turned off, and I talked to Dave Lopez about that. Mm-hmm. And then he showed me on paperwork, it's like, pass the body of the meter, that's yours. So I repaired that and then put on a sacrificial anode. So it does happen. It happened to me, and I can tell you from personal experience, not having water turned on is a huge inconvenience. And I had a question on slide 13. We get around 50 people to get locked off. About how long are they locked off? So one possibility for lock off is you have somebody that's going to move. They know they're going to move, so they just stop paying their water meter.
Right.
Or they just stop paying the service. And then it's going to be off till somebody else comes along to get new service.
And you do see that. You see, we tend to know the pattern of those customers, and we can see that when customers start asking for bulky pickups or date that they close the account, or when they call and say, like, hey, what's the last day that I could stay here before you turned us off? So obviously, we pay attention to those details when they call in.
So how frequently is it? Of the 50 that of the 100 or so or 60 or so that get turned off in a month,
mm-hmm.
is it like 6 or 10 that get turned on within a day or two, or it's
the majority of them get turned on the same day? Okay. You usually get a list of about 6 customers or maybe 5 that stay on the standby list for the technician that works the standby list at night. Okay. But they do have, if they call out the standby list or the standby gentleman who's working that night, he will turn them on. Without proof of whether they made the payment or not, and then he'll relay that information to us, and our customer service team reaches out to those customers.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Martha.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on to our emergency and incident.
Well, hello. I cannot compete with everybody else. Might support you the thing. Am I doing that? No, I'm just reading it. So for the month of March, we responded to 316 incidents. That's a 45 call increase from the same time frame last year. 77.5% of our calls are medical responses as normal. We went to 20 traffic collisions, and some, we started running some wildland fires now, as you saw yesterday, as well. So those are starting to pick up. It did have some pictures of the storage unit fire. What do I do?
Yeah.
No, that's not.
Can you drop?
What's that?
Can you email them to us?
He has.
Oh.
Do
you have a port?
On this?
Yeah.
No. Or iPad.
Yeah. Thank you.
We did have some pictures of the incident that occurred. I know it was at the in the March month, but I also missed last meeting because I was away in Sacramento. But that storage unit burned 15 units, damage 15. Well, we went about almost 2.5 alarms on that fire to get that under control. So we had about 12 to 14 fire engines, a couple ladder trucks. So it was a pretty significant fire. Like I said, I think the last meeting, us going to that new municipal staffing model, I got immediate feedback from the crews at scene that captain was able to immediately engage. He really, where they parked, he couldn't see what was going on. He was able to go while his engineer was able to focus on securing a water supply and getting lines pulled and stuff. So it was a, quite frankly, pretty invaluable. So I thank you for that. I don't know if we're going to wait to put that up, but outside.
No, I don't have what I don't have what I thought I had. Sorry.
Yeah, and if you want, I could pass around the pictures, but or I can email them to you. I think Brian's got them to you, but outside of that, yeah, we're getting in a wild end season and get prepared for that.
Growling.
That's all I got.
So the fire yesterday.
Yes,
what was the damage? That's terrible.
We had one structure that sustained damage. The fire got up in the eaves of one. The crews were able to get inside of it because they were there and actually accessed the fire that was in the attic and saved that structure. There was damage to the inside. It's going to have to be repaired, but it's not. It was not that much, actually. And then there was some cosmetic damage to one other one. And then a couple of outbuildings were destroyed. Outside of that, we were able to keep it out of everybody's home. So it worked out really well.
Okay.
So. Very fortunate. It's good.
No. The yearling fire?
Yearling fire, yeah.
Are you on it?
Yeah, I came back up.
My daughter's got a house on yearling.
Yeah. That was the house that was one of the houses that got damaged.
No,
well, it was on yearling. Not seniors.
Next door, yeah.
Was it the next door house? Yeah. So.
Boy, that thing is
that. It was.
Yeah.
It was quick. It's very quick. So yes. We're very thankful.
I had a question. There's the monthly activity report. One of the items there is. Number of weed abatement inspections performed.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you my understanding of this. it rains, the grass grows, and becomes summer and you mow. And if somebody doesn't mow prior to the summer season, you want to let them know that they need to do that. I'm interested in if you could report at the next, at the second meeting of next month, about how many weed inspections, or about how many notices of weed abatement occur in like a common year, and what time of the year they occur. I'd be interested to know that.
Yep. Got it.
Anything else? Okay. Moving on to
Thank you.
Item C, General Manager and Staff Report.
Yeah, I just have a few, I guess, four quick updates. One, the Mayor Pancake Breakfast, that's upcoming May 7th. I think that's a Thursday before our next board meeting, I guess, 7:30 a.m. Indian Hills Country Club, Golf Club, one of the two. Being members of the chamber, we have four tickets. One's already secured for Director Leja. If you are interested, let us know. You can use those tickets. I don't know if there's, is there a deadline, Melissa, that you're aware of? Okay, well, sooner rather than later. So if you're interested in attending, part of our chamber tickets, and even if you want to attend and we had used up those tickets, let us know. We'll get you a ticket.
I don't need a ticket.
Okay. So let us know. That's 3 weeks from today. It's always a fun event. I've been the last few years, and you know, members on the dais can attest to that. Well attended. I think there's participation from the schools and whatnot. The breakfast is good too. Just a good kind of networking community event. So update there. Second, the Hooper Valley JVOC open house. That's upcoming as well. That's May 16th, which is a Saturday. I don't have the time here. We got any other time? Okay.
It's in the morning.
It's in the morning. I think it's 9:30 and it runs for 4 hours, but I can get more information. But that's right over here, the Jake Bach building off Mission Boulevard right before the bridge. So that's upcoming. We are slated to participate as we've done the last couple of years. So we're excited to participate once again. Third, 2 days ago, we had a tour at Vertec. I know Vertec's not here tonight, although we're talking about Vertec stuff later on in the meeting. But so we toured what they call the Robert E. Nelson Transfer Station, their MRF, Material Recovery Facility. That's what that's short for. So what we did is we had a small little presentation in the boardroom, and then we basically kind of just walked the various catwalks and looked at all their different processes and procedures and how they're integrating new technology. And you see like a little arm picker picking up all the contaminated waste. And then you kind of get through the whole process and you see like the final product, and then how like you kind of look down and you see all the aluminum cans in one container, then all like the detergent containers in a different large container, like all the milk cartons. And it's just, it's pretty remarkable how like, you know, you put all your stuff in your trash, you put it by the curb and you kind of just forget it. And it obviously goes somewhere, and there's people that take all of that and they got to sort it out. So whatever, you know, we as consumers can do to make their job easier, obviously that's big when it comes to trash. There's multiple barrels to try to lessen contamination throughout the different waste streams. So we did that on Tuesday. I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
No, I just add, if you have the opportunity to take the tour, do it. It was really fascinating. I asked a lot of questions regarding recycling. And before I came to my meeting today, I was picking things out of the trash can that are going on the counter to be recycled. So it was really good.
Yeah. And then lastly, yesterday we had our spring team builder event. So this is, we closed the office for a few hours. We did a lunch as a team. So we went off premise. We did a lunch as a team. And then in conjunction with that, we did like a little mini golf arcade event. So something that our team here put together, it was well attended. By all accounts, the guys had a good time. So we did close the office temporarily in the middle of the day. We posted that, and we have a calendar of other closures throughout the year. So that's what we did yesterday. It's one of those things where we'll kind of keep, you know, evaluating how that went, revamp it year over year. But our next big event will be our picnic, right? So this will be the second year we do the picnic. That was that one the board will be invited to, but that was yesterday. So just wanted to show a few pictures about that. That was that's
a
it
couple of questions. You said it was well attended. Wasn't attendance mandatory?
No.
So were there people that like stayed at work or they just went someplace
else? If you chose not to attend and you did not have a pre-scheduled day off, it was normal duties.
Normal duties. Okay. Then my recollection is there was some tour in April of some treatment plant at Western was doing.
April 30th.
April 30th, yeah.
So Thursday, I believe.
Oh, okay. So that's this month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Okay, so we're ready to move on to item D, committee reports.
Yeah, I'll be brief on this. So we had a second solid waste committee meeting last Monday, I believe that was. The topic that we discussed at that meeting is on the agenda tonight. It's basically just to go over the rates for 26-27, and we can get into further detail about that way down in the agenda. And then the second committee report, immediately preceding this regular meeting, we had budget workshop two. So not really much to report out other than we focus on the water and the sewer enterprise.
Okay. Now we're going to move back in time to the full consent calendar items.
We want to take a break. Or people.
Are you requesting a break?
No.
I am.
Okay. I think we want to power through.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, do you want me? Okay, we will take a 10-minute break. Yeah, 5:41.
It's relaxing here. So.
Yeah, no doubt. Moving to the consent calendar items, which was 5B by Director Murphy.
First one is the salaries and expenses for the grant first page. Questions on that? There's this bill there from Elrod Vince, and that was for here. And Center Electric billed us like $7,000 for a Ford truck to charger. Is that for that Ford Lightning?
Yeah.
Yep. Have we bought that Ford Lightning?
Yep.
Okay. That's the model of Ford that was discontinued. This is their last model here.
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. And then there's a bill in there from EarthSoft. What is EarthSoft?
Sure. EarthSoft is the... So EarthSoft is the Equus that we talked about earlier. So part of it is a renewal fee. So we're going to pay a yearly renewal fee. But for the implementation portion of the software, that's what we got a grant from Metropolitan. We got a grant from Western for. So they're reimbursing us for it. But that's for our leak detection application for our team, as well as a few other like lab integrations.
So
it's a software.
That software
yes.
incorporates information from what? And how do you feed information
in? Yeah. So that software does a couple of things. That software has a lot of capabilities, but the way we're configuring it is we're primarily going to be configuring it for its leak detection. So what will happen is leak reporting. I apologize, I said the wrong word. Leak reporting. So whenever there is a leak in the system, right now our team has paper forms that they go out there with papers and they notate the approximate amount of leak, how long the leak's been on for, and this is in accordance with the state's requirements. The state has required that we document leaks and we report them on a yearly basis, an annual basis. So what we're doing is we've configured this program such that instead of using these forms, these paper forms, our team has digital forms. In addition to that, this software is extremely powerful where it can do, we have other things that we do on a daily basis that our team goes out there with paper forms and fills out, but then they will be using this software instead. So they're currently building out those other forms for us. What it does is it centralizes everything into a dashboard. So we can query the data and we can look at it and compare it to like weather events, like what's the weather been during that event to see, okay, was there a surge in water because there was a surge in demand because it was hotter that day. So there's a lot of other items that are integrated into this. It uses ArcGIS and Esri as a platform, so we can also export the data into our ArcGIS that we have.
So there's some kind of device that employees would be carrying around. Is that like a phone or is that like a tablet?
Yes, and they already, yes, we already have tablets for our employees. And then in addition, we have 4 tablets. And then in addition to that, employees have the option of they're using their phone or having a district phone provided to them.
So they get that. They can use their personal phone or a district phone or a district tablet.
Correct.
And they're at some physical location. They enter any information in some form.
Correct.
And then that gets sent off through the ether, or that gets like downloaded when they re-arrive?
No, it's so they have both an offline and online mode. So if for whatever reason they don't have signal, when they have signal next, it'll push it through. It'll be in the queue. And most of the time when they have signal, it'll automatically get sent and uploaded to the cloud. This is one of those software as a service platforms that Kirk had mentioned earlier. So it is all cloud. It's all in the cloud. We can download it, the data, onto our desktop, but it was recommended that we keep some of this data in the cloud. We've purchased, as part of our agreement with them, we have a certain amount of storage. And because we're so small, it'll take us a while to get there to fill up our storage. So rather than store anything on our servers where it would eat up a lot of our space, we can just use some of that cloud storage that we've already have.
And if we decide to stop using Earth software, they go out of business.
They've been around for over.
Let me get my question.
Sorry.
Do we have some method to get the data?
Yes. Yeah, so
because they're hosting the data.
So yes.
Some method to get the data.
Yeah. So everything can get exported into Excel. So the data can get exported into Excel, or it can also get exported into ArcGIS. So you can export it directly into ArcGIS.
And you have to continue to use them in order to keep having them store that.
Correct. Correct.
So mm-hmm. It's not that we purchase the software, it's that we're renting the software.
Exactly. It's a software as a service. Mm-hmm.
That's all right. Those are all the questions I had on that. I'm going to move for approval of the salaries, expenses, and transfers.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0. Now on to consent calendar item D.
Kirk, Director of Finance, will give that staff report.
All right. So this one kind of goes in conjunction with the next one that Mr. Murphy pulled, but I'll keep them separate. So every time around this year, this time of year, every year, I look at updating like our kind of resolutions and policies regarding banking and investments. This one is a simple formality. So beginning, I believe, in January of this year, our current banker, Pacific Premier Bank, one of our banks that we use, this is where we hold our general checking accounts. We have a general checking account. We have a property tax checking account. We have a water account. And then we also have an investment account with them as well. Pacific Premier Bank was acquired by Columbia Bank. So this DM is just a formality of updating our resolution to list, remove Pacific Premier Bank as the bank and replace it with Columbia Bank. So if you look at that resolution, that is the goal of this DM, you'll see line number 4, it's going to list Columbia Bank, formerly Pacific Premier Bank. And so that is the purpose of this DM, is simply to update this resolution and have it be more accurate. That is pretty much the goal of this. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. But nothing has changed besides listing Columbia Bank as the bank now and changing the name of that one.
Do we ever shop around to see if there's a better bank for us?
I have talked with other banks. I haven't had a need yet as far as having issues with Pacific Premier Bank. I think that would probably be preferred to be an RFP for banking solutions.
We do currently still hold some funds with Citizens Business Bank, but we don't primarily bank with them as far as our active checking account. Like all of our utility bills, they end up funneling into a water account at Columbia Bank right now.
Well, and just a comment. So when I first started, one of the things that was kind of ingrained in me is some of the banking institutions that were chosen by the board over the years were with local banks, right? So Citizens Business Bank is a local bank. So that's an existing bank that we have. So we do a lot of banking with them anymore. We had a lot of CDs with them over the years that we have since redeemed. And then Columbia Bank is a current bank, formerly Pacific Premier Bank. But then prior to that, it was called Security Bank of California, which at the time was also a local bank. So so that was kind of the direction of the board at the time. Again, this is years and years ago. So it was the philosophy to have local banking services. Obviously, Pacific Premier had gotten, gobbled up by a larger national bank. And it's something, I mean, if the board wants us to take a look at that, we can. But generally speaking, I think we're pretty happy with Columbia Bank, right?
I mean, there's one reason I could foresee going to maybe another bank is if we have a new like accounting software and the functionality doesn't work with Columbia, I could see a need for that that would be beneficial. But as of right now, our service, I haven't had, I don't have any arguments with that bank per se.
I don't have any more questions on this.
Okay. And then on to consent.
This, this would be, you still got to vote, right?
Oh.
Do the resolution.
Well, we could do it both. Or do you want to do it
separately? We could do them separately.
Okay. So are you making the motion?
No.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Item passes.
I am opposed.
What of that resolution?
All right, the vote, if we could record, the vote is 4-1.
Okay. Did you want a staff report on the calendar item E question?
So for the next, if we can get a staff report.
By law, we should adopt a formal investment policy annually, or we should review the investment policy annually. So this is the main purpose of providing this DM to the board today is to do our annual formal review of the investment policy. The great thing about this is, and there are some changes to this. I'll note there are a couple changes, but they're very simplistic. And I utilize the resource called CDAC, which is California Debt Investment Advisory Commission. It's done by the State of California Treasurer. They basically outline as a local government what we're allowed to do with our funds, right? So we can't go out and go buy crypto and certain stuff like that. There are certain restrictions on where we can place monies. There's certain restrictions on how long maturities we can hold, which is how long the investment is going to, like a CD, kind of like if it's 5-year CD, you don't get your money back for 5 years per se, like that. It restricts you in the amount of years you can hold. It can restrict you in the amount of money that you put in certain investment types, right? So it doesn't want you to invest a whole bunch of your portfolio in stocks and be heavy in stocks and not have certain safe and liquid investments. So there's certain percentages of your portfolio that they will cap you at. And they say, we don't want you to be risky. You are taking taxpayers' money or your ratepayers' money. You need to be responsible. With that, you might not generally, like obviously with interest, the more risky you are, the more interest you will get. The less risky you are, the less you will get, right? So it wants you to stay at a modest, investment strategy. And so that is the whole point of this. And so what I've done, and if you've opened up this DM in the attachment 2, there's our draft investment policy. Okay. And then on pages, it's the colorful pages and it looks like a chart. It's on pages 8 and 9. I take these graphs and these presentations straight from CDAC's published guidelines every year. They come out with them every January, and I just straight use their exact verbiage of what we're allowed to do every year, and I just move it into our investment policy, and I do an update. And that's there's also so what that did this year is it changed the commercial paper, I believe. It changed a couple of maturities to 397 days. I think I outlined that in my
Yeah, the bottom of page one.
Page one, right? Yeah, so it's what am I missing? Yeah, so increase allowable maturity for eligible commercial paper from 270 days to 397 days. It also extends certain local agency investment authorities through January 1st, 2031. This is all from Senate Bill 595, which became effective on January 1st. It continues authorizations for agencies with at least $100 million in assets under management to invest up to 40% of their portfolios in eligible commercial paper. And it maintains authority to invest in U.S. government sectors or securities that may accrue zero or negative interest during periods of negative interest rates. Also under here, under Senate Bill 852, there's more of like a disclosure as far as who's allowed to kind of handle the investments. And so we added a paragraph that added transparency under the Political Reform Act by requiring public officials and consultants with discretionary investment authority to file their statement of economic interest, their Form 700, electronically with Fair Political Practices Commission. So that's me technically on there. So I have a filed Form 700 that follows these guidelines. And we added a paragraph under the delegations of authority, which is in Section 3, to update and add a paragraph that states to follow basically Senate Bill 852. And so other than that, and updating Section 9, which is that figure that I pointed out, those are the updates to the policy. There haven't been any other revisions, and this is just the annual review of it. And so with that, the goal is to adopt a resolution 2026-931, accepting this as our current investment policy.
I had a question on page 8. The first line is local agency bonds. We were talking about in a budget that we're going to hire a bond consultant to issue a bond to do some capital improvements. Is that the kind of bonds that this local agency bonds is talking about?
Yeah, generally what you would do is you would state the a local government bond, which would then be like a tax, usually they're tax-free to the purchaser. So then if the public buys that bond, they don't have to pay taxes on it because it's helping a local government, which is where that...
that'd be like a tax-free municipal bond?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And usually when you go out for those, you stipulate what you're going to use the fund for. You're restricted to use the funds for what that bond was issued for.
So probably wouldn't make sense for us to invest in tax-free municipal bonds. That answered the question. I'm going to move for approval of the
second
staff recommendation on the policy for investments.
Second.
Oh, okay. We have a motion and a second by Director Skirbellis. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. And on to action items. Item 8A, consideration to approve solid waste rate increases.
All right, I will take that one. The evening full of presentations.
We're getting it. We're working on it. Sorry.
Just go to, so you don't have to show everybody now. These weren't in your original board packet, but I did print off the slides. They're on the dais, and they're also on the website currently as well. All right, so this is a very familiar VM. We do this once a year. We've done it once a year in 7 years I've been here. So this is consideration to approve solid waste rate increases for fiscal year 26-27, and then basically authorize staff to start the Prop 218 process. So a little bit of background information. So as the board is aware, there's six primary services that we offer at Rubidoux. Trash is one of them. It is an enterprise fund. Kirk was talking a little bit about it, our budget workshop one. A little bit different for the trash enterprises. You know, we don't have our own assets. We don't have our own trash designated staff. We have some staff that kind of dabble in trash when it comes to our customer service, but we don't have our own like designated trash staff. So we have a contract with Burtech to do that. So Our contract with Birtech goes back to 2008, and that made Birtech kind of the exclusive waste hauler in our service area, so 18 years ago. And over the course of the last few years, we've gone through a number of different amendments. And Amendment 1 and 2 don't really apply to what we're going to talk about, but just so you see a holistic view of our trash contract throughout the entirety of it, I'll just touch upon it briefly. So Amendment number 1, that was adopted by the board in May of 2024, and that adjusted the CPI reference index. I think the original reference index in 2008 was talking about like the LA statistical area, just really no longer applied. So we shored up the language there. We adjusted the monthly billing cost. So that's the amount of money that the district holds back from Birtech to help us up to offset some of the administrative costs. And then just other minor language inconsistencies. So that was amendment number 1. At the same time, we did amendment number 2 under a separate amendment, and that was to add SB 1383 compliance language. 1383 should be very familiar to all of you, that Short-Term Climate Pollution Reduction Act. It's basically the mixed organics. So the big thing is diverting your food waste from the black barrel to the green barrel. There's a number of other, requirements of that law, but that's the big one, especially when it comes to like residential customers, the one that will be familiar to you. And then amendment number 3. So that was done last summer, July of 2025. And amendment number 3 was a little bit more involved than the previous two amendments. I wouldn't call it like an overhaul per se, right? Because we still had our existing contract with Birtech, but there's a number of key changes in our contract effectuated by amendment number 3. So first off, the term. That extended our Birtech contract through December 31st, 2035. And then it talks about price increases and what is allowed under the contract. So I've highlighted them because they'll become more pertinent later in my presentation. But two main components related to price increases. One, there's a max 4% year-over-year increase to the serviced cost component, the CPI cost or the Birtech cost. And then number 2, no more than a 2% difference in the cost of a 90-gallon residential barrel compared to Herzberg Alpha, right? So, and I'll talk more about why that is, but most of our customers on the trash side are residential customers that have a 90-gallon can. So over the years, the board has been very sensitive to the cost on the residential side. So, there are two different service providers in Herzberg Valley, well, I guess jurisdictions in Herzberg Valley. It's us and the city of Herzberg Valley, same waste hauler. And over the years, the two costs have kind of gone outwards like that. So what we did, and with the help of the Solid Waste Committee and then the board to adopt the actual amendment, is we got Birtech to kind of acknowledge that huge decrease and write in language in our amendment to say that can no longer exceed more than 2%. Number 3, street sweeping. So that's no charge to the district. That was a great win. And then additional free service to our customers. That includes an expansion of the bulk add and pickup program, youth battery recycling, barrel rollout service, holiday tree collection program, community cleanups, greenway services, and used oil collection. So that was a big undertaking that we, three, I guess six of us took on last year, and I think a huge win for our district and its customers. All right, so then we move on to fiscal year 26-27. So in March of this year, Birtech reached out to me and they submitted their fiscal year 26-27 rate sheets. The proposed increase, or they proposed increases across all service types and frequencies. And one thing to highlight, there's a new service that they're offering this year, livestock waste services. So those that might have like farm property or have like horses or, I don't know, cows or whatnot. If you generate livestock waste, there is now a service to I guess collect and dispose of that waste. That was never a service provided in our jurisdiction in previous years. So we had two Solid Waste Committee meetings, and I know we did minimal reports out at the regular board meeting after said committee meetings. But the first one was in March 16th, 2026. We met with Birtech representatives. We sat here, kind of went over their proposed rates. At the end of that meeting, we asked them to go back, maybe sharpen their pencils a little bit, see if there's something they can do on the residential side. We came back April 7th. We kind of talked about the service cost component. There's been a lot of concessions made by Birtech over the last 3 or 4 years. And what we ultimately decided is that they weren't going to revise the proposed rates from the March 16th committee meeting. So at the conclusion of the second committee meeting, the Solid Waste Committee made a recommendation unanimously to come to the full board for consideration, which is what the full board is considering tonight. Okay, so a little bit of the analysis. I mentioned that a bulk of our trash customers are residents. So 90% of our trash customers are residential customers with a 90-gallon can. And historically, that has been our benchmark when it comes to analyzing rate increases. I think something the board has appreciated because they never really kind of directed me to incorporate kind of other analyses. So that will be the benchmark here again tonight. So the proposed adjustment, 90-gallon residential barrel, the current rate is $38.92. What they're proposing is an increase of $40.65 per month. That comes down to $1.73 increase per month, or 4.45%. I will note, and I made mention previously, that our residential rate has to track with Harupa Valley, no delta greater than 2%. So Harupa Valley is also going through this process. And what's been communicated to us is if Harupa Valley does increase their rate, our rate will remain 0.39%. So basically the same again, but lower than what Harupa Valley is looking to accomplish with their rate adjustment. So that's big because that complies with amendment number 3. So here's a table. This table is in the DM as well. And this is a table I provided over the years. So there's multiple cost components that feed into the overall rate, the rate that the customer sees on their bill, right? And I'm just gonna kind of highlight them briefly. So the CPI component, this is the BurTech service cost. This is the cost that BurTech keeps. There is a year-over-year cap on that of 4%. That's in our new contract. Prior to that amendment 3, there was no cap. So I don't know if you recall, I know Director Wage and Altamirano, you're kind of new to the board, but there was a time in 2020, 2021, 2022, where that service cost component was 7, 8, 9%. It was significant, which is why we got to that huge gap between us and Harupa Valley. So now there's a cap on that. That's 4%. So this year, 3.28%, that increase is contract compliant. And then there's other pass-through fees that we call them, or the county tipping fees. There's three main components there: the landfill tipping fee, recycling, and mixed organics. Mixed organics is food and green waste. So those are the first four components. The fifth component is SB 1383. As I mentioned, that is called the Short-Term Pollution Reduction Act, and that's basically the green waste, or the food waste diversion. And then the sixth component is what we call the RCSD admin fee. So out of the $39 and then going to $40, of that entire amount, $2 is what we, Rubido, keeps to cover our administrative costs to run that business, right? All of the customer service calls come into our staff. Martha, no longer here, but comes into Martha's staff. And you can imagine most of our calls, I mean, we get a number of leaks and whatnot, but most of our calls are trash related, right? So over the years, that cost was 25 cents for 14 years up until 2022, when we started kind of moving that needle in the right direction. And then now $2 is where it stands today. And we're not making any recommendation to change that $2. So now that's the residential component of the overall trash rate. Attachment 1, which is included in your board packet, is all of the different services that BurTech offers. There's a multitude of services, residential, commercial, waste streams, and that's all incorporated in Attachment 1. This is a little bit more on the rate cost component. I think I touched upon everything there. SB 1383, that was one of the most, I guess, CalRecycle overhaul legislations of the last couple of decades when it comes to the trash enterprise. There's a lot of tracking and record keeping that's required, contamination monitoring, reporting, and education outreach. It was pretty involved. And for those of you that had the pleasure of sitting on the Solid Waste Committee over the last 3 or 4 years, like, you're probably inundated with a whole bunch of information as related to 1383. So those are the rates. The next step, if the board accept those rates, would be to kind of start what's called a Proposition 218 process. There's three main requirements. There's three main requirements when it comes to Prop 218. One is you need to have a notice public hearing. where it gives the public an opportunity to provide oral testimony and submit rent protests. Two, the notice of public hearing must be mailed to all property owners of record and tenants directly responsible for the fee at least 45 days prior to the public hearing. And then three, the notice itself must include certain information. That information is the amount of the fee or charge proposed to be imposed, the basis upon which the fee is calculated, the reason for the fee or change, and the date, time, and location of the public hearing. So those are all the three requirements of the Prop 218 notice. So what staff is proposing is a Prop 218 implementation schedule. So tonight, April 16th, the board is considering to authorize staff to initiate the Prop 218 process for increase of the solid waste rates. If that goes through, then on April 23rd, we will post the draft resolution at the district office, kind of in the front there for anybody to inspect it, and on our website. And then no later than April 30th of 2026, we will mail all the Proposition 218 notices to the property owners and tenants. So that will be 7,000 plus mailers that will go out. And then we'll fast forward to June 18th. That's a tentative scheduled date for the protest hearing for the solid waste rates. If that public protest fails, then the board will deliberate on a resolution to adjust the rates. If the board adjusts the rates, then that will become effective July 1 of 2026. So budget considerations, and we talked a little bit about it, budget workshop one. So the trash enterprise, we don't have our own assets. There's really no sense to build up reserves. For us, as long as the trash enterprise can kind of run break even, to us, that is success. Because if we can at least accomplish that, then we can minimize the subsidy from property taxes, right? And as Kirk highlighted, when it comes to the water and the sewer fund, we need to free up as much of those monies as possible to offset the financial burden on the water and the sewer enterprise. So to the board's credit, in 2022, when we started shifting that 25 cents per customer per month to $2, the budget is an estimate. It's a very refined estimate, but we do think in this fiscal year, we will finally accomplish that objective where the trash enterprise will effectively be break even. So then we can eliminate the property tax subsidy. So we're still calculating the final revenues, and you'll see the final revenues as presented with the presentation of the final budget on May 21st. So it is the recommendation of the board to accept the rates as proposed by PERTEC for fiscal year 26-27, to authorize staff to initiate the Prop 218 process that includes the preparation and distribution of the required notices, to establish June 18th as the date for the solid waste public protest hearing in accordance to Prop 218, and to direct staff to return to the board with a resolution for consideration and potential adoption following the conclusion of the public protest hearing. I know that's a lot, but any questions?
I'm good.
There's the text of the resolution. We're going to have it at the district office and on the website. Do we send a copy to the library?
I don't think we have historically sent a copy to the library, no.
Okay. Question I got about one of these slides here is the percentage of the rate increase. One of them was like 12 point something or other. Get the slide to bring here.
Probably mixed organics.
It's the mixed organics. So that's the green barrel?
That's the green barrel.
So there was a push to have kitchen waste, like banana peels and apple cores, put in the green barrel.
At the state level, yes.
Yeah, that's what the state wanted. You know?
Yes.
And what we're seeing is that the cost of process, that element of the waste stream is going up.
Correct.
Do we think it's the shift of the, there's more handling with the mixed organics? That they have to separate out those plastic bags from the kitchen waste, or we think it's just it's more expensive to ferment that, to compost that stuff.
I'm probably not the technical expert to answer that question, but just generally speaking, 1383 has been around for a few years, so they had costs built in a few years ago, knowing that those will be placeholder. And then as they kind of understand that cost component more, they will adequately, I guess, recover that cost, I guess, appropriately. I don't know if I'm answering that correctly, but with more and more data that gets submitted of usage characteristics over the last 3 years, they're better able to refine that cost. So I think what you're seeing today is a more accurate cost. Now, to answer your question, your second question is, I mean, just being on site a couple of days ago, yeah, I mean, we saw the people like take the stuff out. I mean, it's quite the process to dump all the green barrel stuff, have it dropped off, and then have people manually sort through the plastic bags, open them, divert that green waste into a different pile. So, if you want a better technical answer to that, I would have to facilitate that with our BIRTech representative.
Yeah, I was looking to understand what the change in the statistics for the mixed organics is. So there's that data that BIRTech has on the amount of tonnage for the mixed organics.
Yes.
Yeah, you had sent me the data on that for a year prior to handing out the those
Else?
pails, and then 9 months after. What I'm interested in is the tonnage of the mixed organics trending up, staying flat, or trending down? That's the thing I'm interested in. And if there's a there's some kind of number that can be assigned to that trend, it's going up a few percentage points, going down a few percentage points, but it's also possible that it's fluctuating and that it's not possible to determine the trend. I would be interested in that.
Okay.
Something else that we heard on our tour was they are finding that people are throwing bag trash in the green cans. If their black can gets full, then they're throwing it in the green. And so it kind of complicates the sorting.
Yeah. We found a they found a coffee maker in the green can too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Was it a Keurig?
No, it
No.
was a coffee maker thing.
So,
Yeah, are there any other questions or comments?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes 5-0.
I just want to say BIRTech has been quite gracious with us. They've given us a lot. They've really,
Yeah.
they've done a lot.
When you send us the dates for the front to do 18 notice.
Yeah, you'll get one in the mail as a paying ratepayer. But yeah, I'll give you the.
As long as I don't get two.
We shored that up a couple of years ago, Director Murphy. And trust me, Martha and I are in sync now. So we want to make sure we don't have that issue again.
Yeah, definitely want to compare those databases.
We are now on item 8B.
I got to the
All right, Kirk will bring us home with that.
So
yeah.
this is the same kind of concept, but slightly different, right? We've been talking about water and sewer rates through our budget workshops. This is the only difference is this one. The Prop 218 for these went out when we did the initial rate increase in year one for the cost of service study. So this one does not require a Prop 218. This one is going to be the first reading of an ordinance and a public hearing, which we're planning. For the timeline would be May 7th. There would be a public notice that would go out 10 days before that, which would be on April 27th to notify the public. And then we would go with the second reading on May 21st, which would be the same day we would or we're aiming to adopt the budget. So doing them in unison, right? So I want to have them at the same time so that way the budget can be as accurate as possible. And I know we've kind of gone over, I know raising rates is not the ideal thing, but if you look at the budget and kind of the capital projects that we're hoping to accomplish, having that extra bottom line and doing it gradually over the course of years is going to be very important for us. And especially keeping that bottom line healthy is going to be important when it comes to issuing debt. If we do require to issue a bond, they require rate covenant compliance, which means our revenues are basically going to be why they're giving us that credibility. Like, that's like our credit rating, right? So if your revenues are very tight compared to your expenses, they're going to say you're more risky. They want you to have a little bit of a buffer on your revenues to say you're more reliable and you're credit worthy of having this bond, and they give you better ratings. And they require you to maintain certain stipulations as debt covenant compliance over the course of you holding that bond. And if you don't meet those revenue requirements, they will fall. You'll be out of compliance with your bond, and they could technically call, which means you got to pay it back. Yeah, and so that would be kind of a big deal. So in order to plan for that and make sure that we're in good health, fiscal health, we're recommending that we go to the max notice rates in the cost of service study. In here in this DM, you kind of see the historical information that is directly from our cost of service study, which kind of outlines where our undesignated reserves are and where they were and where we're trying to go as far as like what our percentages are and where we're trying to be for those. And with our budget right now, there's not really this year the budget, there's not going to be any added amounts to the reserve per se for those funds. They're gonna basically use what comes in because we have a lot of CIP that's going on. Also, you can kind of tell from just when we talk about CIP projects and the master plan projects, there's a lot of stuff on the table that we're looking to try and accomplish. And as you can tell, they're all important projects. I don't think they're all kind of like, you know, what's to kind of say like icing on the cake. It's all kind of things that we need to do. And this is just fiscally responsible for us to accommodate this rate increase. So I'd like to propose, let's see.
Well, Kirk's finding that. I mean, nobody, as you mentioned, nobody likes rate increases, but even if you pull back to Brandon's three presentations or whatnot, like, there's just a lot that we're trying to accomplish. A lot of these treatment plants are very old with not a lot of preventive maintenance over the years. If we do that video line inspection, like to Director Alfamano's point, like there will be issues that pop up, right? So it's one thing to kind of know where the issues are. It's another thing to like not have the money necessary to repair them, right? So it's one of those things where we're just trying to be more proactive and programmatic. And I think Kirk had mentioned this, is like when we're thinking of like these multi-million dollar projects, you can't just increase rates on day one and by the end of that fiscal year have the money necessary to build those things. It's something that you have to kind of think about built up over time, because even this rate increase, I think these are like 5% increases, which are significant. But we only have 7,000 customers. Like, it takes a while to kind of build up those reserves. And that's what we're trying to do. I mean, we have two reservoirs that are 6 years old and two that are 30 years old. We have pipelines that are 70 years old. We have treatment plants that are 30 years old, 25 years old. We're just trying to make sure that this system, or this district and this system, kind of stays on par with all the development in the area, not only for new customers, but even the existing customers that have already paid into the system that have been, you know, ratepayers for years and years and years. So that's what we're trying to accomplish with this. And, you know, even with this, there's already significant subsidy coming from the water and or from the property tax thing. So it's one of those things where the board kind of had a methodology in 2022 to adopt this, and we're just trying to go to year four of that.
I'm ready to make a motion. Does anything have questions?
Did you have something else to add?
I was just going to say that when we went over this last year, we're the second lowest in the area that I could find. And when we go to approve this, I'll give you all the information and on the local entities right here, and I'll show you where we compare. And then also, like, we don't have the luxury of like what's the economies of scale, right? We're still kind of small, so that kind of factors in where we might not want to be technically. I mean, ideally, we'd like to be the lowest, but it doesn't necessarily make the most financial sense sometimes. So I'd like to provide. If you need any information from me, let me know what you need. But that's my goal, is to help show this scenario and show the picture for you so you can make your judgment. And that's it.
I have one comment and a request. So I'll go with the request I made it previously. It's I'm interested in the rates as we compare to the surrounding agencies.
I remember your comment.
And then for some of that, you have to
they have tiered rates for their water usage, and you have to pick a single value for water usage. Those kids came up with a number for the per capita, but whatever our average is, I think it's like whatever our typical customer uses, whether it's like 10 or 15 units per month, that's the number I'd be looking to compare rather than some arbitrary one. So I understand that that's a burden, but if you get to get those comparisons, like four or five surrounding ones rather than Chino Hills or tonight,
and I'll try and find information on what they've done with their rates too, and the percentages to try and give you a trail and show you how we compare.
Second is that something I'd like to point out. It's what this district has historically done for a long period of time is use surplus, what was called surplus tax revenue, to defray rates so that we would have the lowest rates, rather than put that money aside for later capital improvements. So the reason we don't have a vast treasure chest of millions and millions of dollars is that every year for as long as I've been on this board, that's 10 years, we have taken millions of dollars of tax revenue and use that to defray the cost of the utility bills. So that's there are people that will and that practice is common. That's why we have the unfunded mandates. That's why people talk about the Social Security fund having trouble. That's just a common thing. That's all I had to say on that.
Second motion.
Okay, we have a motion by Director Morano, second by Director Scarbellis. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. And we are moving on to director's comments and requests. Director Morano.
Great job, everyone. Thank you for all your presentations.
Director Scarbellis. Director Treva?
No comment.
Director Murphy?
I have something. I have two things. One, I was highly surprised that those kids were all dressed alike.
Yeah.
That was not my college experience. The second thing is that there's this thing that Western's putting on April 30th. Because some people are going to that.
I am.
You know, one of the things you can ask them is if they know of any other districts nearby that have built a reverse osmosis plant. I'd be interested to know if they know of recent reverse osmosis plant construction.
Well, we'll be meeting enough people. I think there's everybody from San Diego, right?
Yeah.
San Diego up.
I just have a brief comment. I would just like everybody to be aware that May 16th, in addition to the JBOC open house, there will also be the Veterans Memorial Wall Ceremony, where military members that are past and have lived in Huripa Valley and served their community in Huripa Valley will be honored. And if you've never attended it, I highly encourage you to do so. It's a beautiful ceremony and a beautiful new memorial wall. So,
my dad put on that.
Get to getting.
Yeah, I need some help with that.
And I really want to thank staff here tonight for all of the hard work we put into this meeting for a long time before tonight and during tonight. So thank you all.
Okay.
And with that, we will adjourn at 6:39 to our next meeting on May 7th.
Budget workshop 3, 2:30, 3 weeks from today.
Same May 7th.